Welcome back to Chad and Steve Have a Podcast. It's been over a year since we chatted with Cass Arson of Clutterbug, a YouTube channel with tips and tricks for helping us all declutter our lives. And what I like about her videos is that they aren't just more of these kind of videos showing you how to get organized, which usually means buying more stuff to somehow corral the stuff that is the problem. But her videos get us to examine why exactly our spaces become cluttered and why maybe we need to look inward before heading off to the container store. Clutter might be deeper than physical objects, and I hope we can get into some of this. Cass's channel is filled with her personal wisdom and rules for developing a happier, more productive life. Cass, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I love being here.
Okay, I gotta get right into this because we were just talking about this before we went on the air. Help me with my email. My email is, a couple months ago, I sent Chad like my unread email number. I don't know what it was at, like 4,500 or something on there. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And I think I'm going to wrangle my email, but I never do. And as soon as it's off of that first page of my Gmail, it's gone. I never see it again. but I feel horrible about it. This is like one of those things that just eats at me, especially when somebody sends me a well-meaning email. Okay, I love what you do and everything, and it's all nice, and can I have quick help with something? And I just don't do it.
Yeah, I would love to help you, but here's the honest thing. I almost missed this podcast today because my email has 5,216
See,
in my inbox. It's, you know what
Maybe
it is.
Maybe everybody is.
I think it really depends on the person, and that's what organization is all about. That's what I'm so passionate about, is it isn't one size fits all. And for me, I'm not a detailed person. I'm not the person, as soon as I get an email, to move it to a folder. I will never be that person. That is not me. I am more of a laid back, big picture thinker. So I struggle with details, and that's okay, because I think that's the great thing about Gmail, are that it's so searchable. Right. So if you really need an email, you can search like a keyword that you think somebody may mention. But for me, and I think for you too, what this really comes down to is maintenance. We need to set a date with ourselves every single week. Friday at 2 is go through and bulk delete emails and bulk unsubscribe, right? It's about maintenance. There's no fancy organizing system that's going to solve the issue that we have, which is, in the moment, we're just not thinking about how to manage our emails. We're thinking about the next cool thing we're going to do with our business. So it's all about scheduling time and making that a priority.
It's related to photos, too. I think that Google Photos and email is kind of hand in hand, because the photos, I think you're either the type of person who just throws photos in there, or you're the one who makes albums and you categorize. Here was my trip to Disneyland. It's all contained
in
one
people?
Nice. Well, I'm getting better at that. I got to say, I'm getting better at that, because I do like to kind of come back to these. But you're right. Search is just the way. And you know, actually, a lot of this begs the question, and this might be a question we asked you last time. What is the difference between organizing and decluttering?
Yeah, so organizing is giving everything a dedicated home. So creating this is where my screwdrivers go. This is where the calculator goes. Decluttering is removing things from your home. Tidying is putting things back. And I think it's this simple thing that it confuses people. They're like, I'm decluttering my house, but they're just tidying their home. We can never truly organize a space unless we declutter first, unless we have a manageable amount of stuff. And 9 times out of 10, somebody who's struggling with a disorganized or a messy space, it's because they have too much stuff.
Why is decluttering the simplest job that one can do, but also the most difficult job that one can do?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think it goes against human nature. We're hunters and gatherers. We're collecting things. It feels good to acquire. It feels good to buy new things, get gifts. Even, I mean, I'm the type of person, I'm driving down the road, I'm like, look at that perfectly good chair, you know? Hey, I could fix that up. And I like hit the brakes and throw it in the pile in the garage. And letting this go, it feels like we have to feel a lot of feelings, like the regret that we spent the money in the first place, the guilt of letting go of something, the identity, right? Maybe we used to ski, but we haven't in the last 15 years. Oh, it hurts to give up that piece of myself. And what we really need to do is realize that our house is a container and we can only keep what fits comfortably in our house. And everything we keep is inventory that we have to manage, not just physically, but mentally as well. And is it worth it? Is that item worth it? And when we take a look and really ask ourselves that, have I used it? Do I even like it? Would I buy it again? Is it worth the amount of space, time, and energy it's taking from me? Usually the answer is no.
I just came back from a trip a couple of months ago visiting a family member who had some knee surgery, and she needed some help kind of with the house while I was there. And so I thought, well, I'll help straighten it up so she can move around a little bit in the house as she's recovering. And oh, wow, this is the first time I've ever experienced something that was, I mean, I guess there's hoarder levels of various degrees, but I think she tends to be, she's an elderly lady and she tends to keep a lot of furniture, and the place is so packed with stuff. And so I was going through the kitchen and I'm trying to, okay, the physical therapist says you got to have things down lower. You can't be reaching, and you can't be crawling around on the floor on your knees to get to these lower cabinets. So I was trying to organize this stuff, and oh my God, it was shocking to see like how many just like hundreds of like measuring cups and weird like bamboo skewers. And so I would try to ask her about these things and be like, well, can we get rid of some of this? Can we thin it out? And it was very emotional experience for her. It was really, really difficult for her. And I probably handled it wrong, right? Because I think now she still kind of resents it a little bit that I was. And I didn't throw anything away. I said, we'll just put this down in the basement. We'll just get it out of here. And because she was really thinking, don't throw things away. I may need that. She hasn't used this stuff in 20 years, you know? But I don't know. Maybe it's just not my position as an outsider to have done that. And I kind of feel bad now.
I wouldn't feel bad. I think the thing is, they say, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. When it comes to decluttering, you have to want to. And the worst thing you could do is take something from someone who's not ready, because then that anxiety is heightened and they'll hold on tighter to everything they have. And this is what it really comes down to, is anxiety and fear. Fear of loss, fear of making a mistake, fear of regret, a lot of perfectionism coming in, and also fear of like, just, yeah, like, why did I buy this in the first place? What if I miss it again? What if I have to rebuy it? Right. I don't have the money for do that. So it's all this like financial insecurity, and there's just so much baggage attached to that spatula you bought at Walmart for $5.
Or that you somebody know, gave like, you know, like a pot holder. It's cute. It has a little pig on it. You know?
It's so much emotional baggage, but just like any time things cause anxiety, the more we avoid a situation that causes us anxiety, the more it sort of reinforces, oh yeah, that was scary. Make sure you don't do that. Our brain is trying to protect us from feeling like uncomfortable things. But if we push through the fear and realize decluttering is supposed to feel scary, but we know it's good for us, we're scared crapless and we're doing it anyways, then we realize, oh, that wasn't so bad. Actually, I'm really proud of myself. Oh, that felt good. And we start building our muscle. That's what we call it, our decluttering muscle. It's definitely, I mean, I don't want to get all like, woo, but it's kind of exposure therapy. The more you do it, the easier it is. And eventually you get to a point where you love letting go because you realize how much it benefits your life. But the only way to get there is practice. The only way to get there is grab a trash bag and start with really easy stuff like expired food, expired medication. Mm-hmm. And if you're helping a family member, if you're helping someone who's really reluctant, we never start with cool stuff or stuff they find cool. We always start with trash. And we show them this isn't scary. Like, look how much space you have. And doesn't that feel good? You did a great job. And it's pretty amazing how quickly your brain can accept that this isn't scary and this is actually a positive experience.
They say habits take 4 to 6 weeks to kind of set in. And if you have a kind of consistent effort towards reaching a goal, like you said, rather early on, you start to see some small, like, wow, I have this drawer free now, or this one cupboard is organized. And one of the things that we get a lot at Clean My Space is like, where do I start? I have everything's everywhere and it's very easy to put it off because I just don't know where to start. So ultimately that always stops me from starting because it's like, I just don't know where to start. And my advice is usually just like literally walk in a room, look at the first thing you see and you pick it up and start there. And if you do 5 things today, that's great. But you build off of that and you build off of the good feelings of that. Is that accurate in to the people who are listening, who feel so overwhelmed, who feel like, oh my gosh, this is a year away, isn't it? Cass, you've been doing this for so long. It's easy for you to say you're not in my house, which is full of stuff. What do you say to those people?
Exactly the same thing, because I think so many of us are stuck in this all or nothing cycle. We wait till we can do it right, till we have the time to do the entire room, so this weekend I'm going to get a babysitter for the kids and I'm going to schedule time and then I'm going to do it. But consistency is the key. This all or nothing mentality is why we're stuck in a messy, chaotic house in the first place, because we're waiting for the perfect opportunity the first time. We're waiting for motivation, which is like a huge mistake, right? Motivation never comes at the right time. We have to create our own. So 5 minutes matters. I love that you're just going in and one thing, take one step, take one bite out of that. And that is the real secret to success. I am a very lazy person, listen, and I am a recovering super slob, hoarder level. My home was, I had paths from the front door to my couch, to my fridge, and to my bed. And I am not exaggerating. And how do you go from that to someone who, my home is always tidy? It's 5 minutes at a time, little tiny steps, and being consistent with those little steps. And I work a lot less now than I did when my home was messy. And this is such a misconception that people have, that messy homes are lazy people. That is not true, because you are working so hard to stuff shuffle, to manage your mess.
Yeah.
It's great. You're looking for things constantly. You're shuffling things around. Tidy people are able to have a lot more free time. It's a lot easier. But you have to get there by letting go of the things you don't use and you don't love, because that is step one.
Are you at that place now where you said you're pretty good at decluttering your own life? Are you there now where you just love getting rid of things and everything has a place?
I am for the most part, but it's also things are constantly coming in. So I have my own struggles. Like, I have identity clutter, which is something like I like to decorate my home, right? It's part, I don't know, it's like crafting, making things beautiful. So I'm at the store, I'm like, new throw pillows. I have 57 at home, but what's two more?
This one's orange.
And so, right. Oh, it's ridiculous. And letting those things go, it hurts because I don't have the space for it. I have to declutter, but that's part of my identity. So a really good example of this is someone who loves to read, who's a book lover. Even a book that they'll never read again, that they don't really like, if you try to pull that from their hands, they're going to feel like, no, I'm a book lover. That's my identity. Craft supplies for people who craft, people who love woodworking, it's tools. And so it's making that connection to like, oh, I can still be a person who loves to decorate my home without keeping every single throw pillow I've ever had. So still to this day, I have to have real talks with myself about things in my house. And I think that's human nature. It's human nature.
Yeah, there's something about books too that people seem to be really attached to. I know my dad has. He actually counted them. He's got like, I don't know, 10,000 or something. I mean, literally every place in his house, he's got books. And I asked him, like, why do you read these? And he's like, oh, like, time to time, you know, he tries to justify. Yes, he does. But it's like, no, you don't. You're never going to read these books again. I don't understand this idea. And I used to keep books too. And I went through kind of a purge where I just like, you know, realistically, there's no point. If I want to read it again, I'll just buy it or I'll go to the library or something like that. But man, people are just attached to books.
But it's again, everybody has a different thing that they identify. So obviously your dad thinks he's well
read. Maybe it's like a physical prize. Like I completed this. There it is.
The award. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. And it's something he's proud of about himself. Yeah. He's proud to be well-read and a book lover and intelligent. And so he sees those books and it makes him feel good about himself. But there is a bit of a disconnect between when is this thing that makes you feel good now also contributing to negative things in your life because you don't have a place to sit or entertain or it's too much to dust and take care of, right? So
oh, you can't even really get into the bookshelves. There's like two layers of books.
Right. So there's definitely like a disconnect. And this is where like self-awareness really comes in, which is why I think it's so important for people to watch YouTube videos on decluttering. You don't have to hire an expert to get expert advice. YouTube is such an amazing tool. Like YouTube University, man. If I need to learn something, that's where I go, because what an incredible resource. And there are so many amazing YouTubers dedicated to helping people sort of change their mindset when it comes to their stuff and realize like, hey, this is identity clutter. And yes, my books make me feel good, but the excess amount of books is having a negative impact on my life.
You talk a lot about impulse control, and this might be a good time to bring it up, because why is it easy for me to be impulsive, to want to buy something or eat something or do all of the impulsive things, which are, I guess, traditionally like selfish or whatever, but I'm not impulsive to like, oh, I got to go put the garbage out. Oh, I got to go do some decluttering. Why are we so selective in what we, like people will be like, I'm an impulsive person. It's like, well, you're an impulsive person when you're doing something that you want to do, or you're allowing yourself to be impulsive. So why isn't that a two-way street? Why aren't I feeling impulsed to declutter?
Probably because that kind of stuff kind of sucks, right? It's a little uncomfortable, yeah. Let's be honest. So I have ADHD, and I really feel like, I'm not saying everyone who's impulsive has ADHD, but I think it kind of mimics that same thing where we can really hyper-focus if we enjoy something, if we feel we're good at it. But if we feel like we're not good at something, if we're telling ourselves that this is hard and it sucks, then we're not going to feel like doing it. And I'm not a woo-woo person who's all into like meditation and mindset, but we cannot deny the truth that our thoughts control our actions. So if we're telling ourselves, ugh, I have to clean the kitchen tonight, that sucks, I'm going to wait till tomorrow, we're not going to feel the impulse to do it. But if we catch ourselves having these thoughts and say, I deserve to have a clean kitchen and I deserve to wake up tomorrow morning to a clean sink, that's going to make me feel so good. When we catch ourselves and actively change our thought, we're going to feel that impulse to gift ourselves with a clean kitchen. So I hate to say it, but the truth is we're in the habit of having these negative thoughts and we need to create new thoughts. And it's a fake it till you make it situation. Catch yourself having it, make it into a positive.
One of the really interesting things that you said in, you have a few videos which are directed towards people who suffer from ADHD or, you know, the symptoms or varying levels of symptoms of that. And this is really timely for me because I, in my mid-40s, am actually going through and exploring this. It's the first time I've ever addressed my impulsiveness and procrastination and laziness and all of the other things, which has been for my entire life, like you say, this is my personality. This is who I am. This is what creates the painting and gives me the creativity and the ability to write and do all the other wonderful things that I do. But like there's this confusing cross section between when I'm using this as like, oh, that's the reason, or this is something which is hampering me. And in one of those videos, you mentioned something which really resonated with me. And you talked about how a procrastinator will procrastinate, like everybody procrastinates doing things that they don't want to do. Come tax time, I am literally the dude on July 30th or whatever the last day is, frantically going through all of my bank because I just naturally procrastinate on that. But you brought up another interesting point, which is they will also procrastinate on things that they enjoy. And that really rang true for me because it's like, that's one place where I thought I would be able to control it. It's very easy to say I'm an impulsive person or I procrastinate or whatever when it's kind of like, oh, because I clearly don't enjoy doing this. But when it's painting or when it's like, oh, I have this great idea and I just need to write it out. And then it's like, oh, this is going to be the best idea I've ever written. I'm going to do this later tonight. And then I'm procrastinating on things that I'm actually really looking forward to. So that's starting to call into question if I were to be experiencing this or whatnot. So thank you for bringing it up because it's incredibly timely for me. And sorry about hijacking the podcast to talk about ADHD, but no, it is incredibly timely for me right now.
I could talk about ADHD all day. I do find it so fascinating. And I was 40 when I was diagnosed, 40 years old. And it's like getting an actual diagnosis, taking medication and seeing the difference. I don't know. It was so, I get emotional about it because I realized I'm not lazy. This isn't a defect in my character. It's not that I'm not strong enough. It's not that I don't have enough willpower. It's that I literally have a smaller prefrontal cortex. And right. And I have to find ways to adapt to that. I have to have tools just like any other sort of disability. And I don't want to say that ADHD is a disability. I shouldn't use that word because I truly believe it's a superpower and we can accomplish insane, amazing things. But just realizing, oh yeah, my brain does work differently and it just changed everything. And so I'm so happy to hear that you're going through that process because, man, it feels so good to realize what's going on and that there isn't something wrong with you and that you're not doing anything wrong, right? And look at all the incredible people with ADHD that are like killing it, like business owners and entrepreneurs, and they've learned to adapt. They've learned to adapt for their deficiencies and really just like lean into the parts of ADHD that make us so successful.
How does that manifest itself in you and how do you harness that?
I realize that I'm just never going to be a detailed person. I hire someone to do my taxes now. Like I have to be really, I have to look at my life and say, what is my real lacking of executive function? And I use electronics to help. So I have alarms and reminders all day, every day. And I hire people to do the stuff that I would have to really force myself to do. Anything super detailed, like accounting, taxes. I have someone who organizes my photos for me. Isn't that embarrassing to say as an organizer? No. But I do. I hire a girl who takes care of all of my sort of digital organization because that is not my strength. That's not my superpower. And just taking that off my plate has freed up my brain for so many more cool, creative, incredible endeavors. So, yeah, I know what you're saying too, Chad. I'm the same way. I procrastinate even the fun stuff, but just having that self-awareness is what's going to change everything. It's like making that connection, having that self-awareness. Oh, I do this. How can I change that? And minutes matters is my mantra. So I can do anything for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And we can talk about that in a second. Thank you for saying all of that. It was like at the very beginning, it's so overwhelming because you start kind of like going through the inventory of your personality or your identity. And you start kind of just seeing this dry, static, like description of it that doesn't describe you, but it describes all of the elements which you think are so special. I sleep in, but I'm the guy who works extra late and does a whole bunch of work when everybody. So my team is like, it would be really nice to have someone who's here during regular business hours, but I'm in the background being like, no, I'm this guy who works on these crazy hours because I'm this eccentric whatever. So at first it kind of felt like it robbed me of something which was my identity. But now as I'm getting a lot more comfortable with the idea or like the thought of this, there's comfort coming in it because as you say, it's now starting to become like, I'm not bad for doing it. Like, my brain is kind of programmed to work this way. And it works very well when I'm doing art, because I can be crazy focused on art and do amazing things in a short period of time. But that is like this erratic thing, which I'd never felt that I could control. And maybe now I understand why, because I was really dealing with trying to sort out everything that was going on in my head and thinking that it was normal and thinking that I was normal, and not saying that I'm not normal in any way.
I know what you're saying.
But it's nice to have, like, it's nice to be able to like learn that there's a definition for it and there's context and it exists, and then learn how it kind of becomes a part of you and it becomes a part of your identity. And it's not something to want to push away, but it's something to kind of embrace. And that's why I love the fact that you talk about it as a superpower. And that has been really helpful. And your videos just on ADHD have been really helpful. So thank you for that, Cass.
That's awesome. And okay, so listen, I hope you build up the confidence. I've built up confidence over the year to really stand up for myself. So I don't work Fridays. And my husband and we have employees too coming in. They're like, well, you got to work 9 to 5. And I'm like, listen, man, I can't always do that, because I need to harness that creativity that comes with ADHD, and the part that I work best at night. I'm editing for like 10 hours in the middle of the night, and that is my prime time. And so I give myself days to just be ADHD, if that makes sense. I give myself times like, no, today I'm not fitting in a box. I'm going rogue. And that recharges me. And I have confidence now in myself to say, like, I don't have to fit into society's box all the time. I'm built different. And man, it feels good. It just feels good to embrace that.
Well, I can attest to the fact that Chad is up all hours of the day, because I'll get a text from him at 10 o'clock my time and he's 3 hours ahead of me.
It's like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I'm like, what? Are you still up? And then in the morning, text again. So I'm like, do you ever sleep? I don't know.
During business hours.
It's too bad our kids can't get on that schedule. Like,
right?
I could be a vampire. It would be.
No, see, I'm totally the opposite. And I used to be more where I would be like this night owl. I love staying up late and everything. But now I'm like on such a schedule that I don't even use an alarm. I go to bed like between 10 and 11 every night. Usually 10, I'm in bed, and then I get up at between 5:45 and 6 o'clock without an alarm, even on weekends when I don't have to. And, you know, people will ask me, why don't you sleep in? I'm like, well, I just can't. I just wake up. And if I'm lying awake in bed, then I get up out of bed. So I don't know. I guess that's my only character flaw.
I wish, man. I wish I could be that. But
I wish I could too.
That sounds amazing. Instead of beating myself up about the fact that I'm not a morning person, my best self is late at night. Like, I am an evening person. So I schedule the things that I have to get done at night. I'm not going to schedule more meetings in the morning because my brain's not working in the morning. I'm not going to schedule like hard stuff or things I don't really want to do. I schedule at night. And again, that self-awareness, like knowing when your prime time is and booking your life around you instead of you trying to always adapt to life, I think is the secret to success for everyone. It's having the self-awareness and creating habits around your natural tendencies.
And if anybody is listening to this and has never tried working late at night, give it a try. It's so crazy to work and not be interrupted by emails or phone calls or other things that during the day, it's very normal to like interrupt the day for lunch and da da da. But when you're working from 10 o'clock at night till 1 o'clock in the morning, you end up kind of being hyper focused and you have a lot less distractions to deal with. And speaking of distractions, we live in a world full of digital distractions right now. How do you manage your phone and how do you manage social media and not becoming too much of a screen junkie?
Yeah, I'm working on that, Chad. Yeah, I'm not great at it. I do have an Apple Watch that I had to let go of. I thought, man, this is going to make me more connected, and I realized it was distracting me more. So, when I'm working at night, I like to edit at night and even plan. I just don't have my phone in the room with me. I also had to give up social media like Instagram, TikTok, and watching other YouTubers, which is bonks because this is what I do for a living. is I watch, I create this type of content, but I just found I would fall into this rabbit hole of two things. One, I would spend hours watching people do ridiculous dances on TikTok or whatever and waste my time. And two, I would really judge my own content in a negative light. Yeah. I would compare. I would say, why am I not doing that? And look at how amazing this is. And so as much as I tell myself that I look at that stuff for inspiration, I know that the truth is I always come away feeling really bad about myself and wasting hours. So I'm not on social media very often, only to post my own things, which makes me kind of a bad YouTuber. I know I'm not supporting my fellow YouTuber friends, but it was just, it was really negative for me. So knowing yourself, right? Just knowing yourself and what works for you and what doesn't. So for me, trying to really limit my screen time has a positive effect on my mental health and my productivity.
Steve, do you do anything deliberately to like manage your screen time?
It's such a good question because I go through these periods where I think I'm just going to totally stop and I'm going to set the phone down. And then there's other times when I don't. And I think that I have an okay relationship with my phone at the moment, but I don't have any specific rules in place. And so there are times when I do spend way too much time just looking at Instagram or stories or something, and then I have to set the phone down. I haven't gotten into TikTok, so I don't really, the times I watch TikTok, it's definitely a time suck. You know what's interesting is have you seen these light phones, they're called? They also called the dumb phone, where it's about the size of a credit card. It looks really cool. It has a black and white screen, and it has very basic functions. You can get texts on it. It has maps, so you can use GPS, I guess. And
it's a phone.
It's a phone. I forgot about that part. Yeah. But a couple minor things, but that's it. So you can't download apps on it. You can't do. And the thing is, like, I don't know, $300 or something, which seems kind of expensive for what it is. But I don't know, just the thought of you have to use technology to fix your technology problem, it seems weird to me. And the reviews I've seen of people using this, they're like, well, it's okay, but I still end up going back and using my phone.
I think it's helpful to use technology to fix the technology sometimes. So I don't know if you know, but if you use an Apple, you can set your screen time. So we set the screen time on our kids' devices and my own devices that they shut off at 10 p.m. My kids shut off at 8 p.m. So I don't have to nag them to get off your screen. I don't have to nag myself to get off a screen. I don't have to nag anyone. We've set that as a hard rule and the internet just shuts it off. And I don't know the password. Because I know myself impulsively, I would just put it in and give myself more time. Or when my kids, if they nag, I would give them more time. But my husband's stern. He's hardcore, man. So only he knows the password to the screen time. So it's very helpful. If you do find, especially at night, you're staying up too late because you're on the internet, giving yourself a screen time and shutting down anything. You can still leave it for your Kindle, but shutting down social media can be really helpful.
I think one of the things that could be helpful to people also is to find activities in your life where you can't use a phone, where it's just not involved. It wouldn't even be practical. And I've gotten into rock climbing and I go to the gym a lot. And all of these activities are good, healthy activities that you can't use your phone. Although you see guys at the gym sitting there on the bench with looking at their phone between sets or whatever. But and even that, I try to limit. Although if I'm using certain machines or if I'm working out on my own, I might be listening to Spotify or something. I don't even know if that counts as using my phone or not. It's all very, very ambiguous, I guess.
I think this all goes hand in hand, doesn't it? It's like it comes back to that impulsivity, lack of self-control. So we tend to overbuy, we tend to spend, we tend to overindulge in so many areas of our life, which adds up to like weight gain and clutter and debt. And these all really go hand in hand. And I think the solutions to all of those are the same too, which is it's those daily small micro habits that we can start implementing in our lives, because that's the secret. You're like, the secret to success isn't in these big, elaborate, insane life changes. It's these little tiny things that we can do.
I think the biggest problem I see with technology use is when it's pretty much just 24/7. And I mean, I can see that with my son and a lot of other people, when that you can't really, your phone is almost attached to your hand. You cannot do anything without it. And I think, do you never have any time just in your own head, just in your own thoughts? And so I've been like making a point of like, and this is probably the time when most people do use their phones, is when you're waiting in line. I've made a point of just putting it in my pocket and just kind of being in the moment. Like, okay, I'm in a line, I'm waiting. Maybe I can observe some people and stuff. So I'm trying to do small things like that. But I think that the mindless use of technology is the trap.
And I'm seeing it with kids too. Do you guys, I don't know if you have employees, but I've recently hired some younger employees. I don't know, are they Gen Z? I don't know. I'm very old.
Zoomers.
But I'll notice they'll be editing a video and watching a TikTok while editing a video, or you know, they're texting a friend while having a conversation with me about something else, completely not even realizing that this isn't normal. So I think with each generation too, I'm noticing, it is an appendage, like it's like another part of them. And there is no realization that, like, they're just trying to do so many things at once. How can you do anything if you're texting and watching videos at the same time?
Well, that's what I was telling my son, because he was like, yeah, I know that older people like to complain that we're always on the phone. And then he was like showing me like these memes going around of pictures taken in the 1920s, like on a bus or something, where everybody is reading a newspaper. You know, he was like, see, there was the same thing back then. Everybody's just looking at media. And I was like, well, yeah, but they put it down when they got off that bus, and then they were doing other things. It wasn't just 24/7. I think there's a big difference there.
They weren't reading the newspapers and driving their cars at the same time. It's what people do now.
I think I remember some people doing that, though.
And I'm going to call out all of those influencers or people who do this for a living who are on social media. And like, I'm on social media because it's my job, which is the worst, most enabling excuse I think I've ever heard. Like, and to your point about being a bad YouTuber, like literally just this silly thought of like, because you don't consume other people's YouTube, like that literally makes you a bad YouTuber. And I get it. That was the core of this community. And it's still such an important part of like being a YouTuber, is still kind of having that whatever. But like, the truth is, like, we make so many excuses as to why we're doing things which we know we shouldn't be doing. And at the end of the day, what your larger point was, is like, you're just wasting time. Sure, you watched 37 you know, short videos about whatever, something, which probably isn't overly important in your life. You know, you spent 37 minutes of your life doing this versus, you know, something else. Let's turn to one other point or one other thing that you talk about a lot, which is forgetfulness, because I have an issue with that. And I'm wondering if there's any tips that you might have for someone who can literally watch an entire 2-hour movie and then 4 minutes after the movie's over, don't even remember the name of the movie, the lead character's name. Sometimes so I'll be watching a movie with Melissa, and they'll be like, da, 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 and I'll be like, who's James? And she'll be like, the main character of the movie that we've been watching for the past hour. So,
Who's that guy? What's
and
he
again,
doing?
now I'm in a space where a lot of this is starting to connect and starting to make a lot more sense because of perhaps ADHD and whatnot. But can you... I've heard that you're pretty forgetful too, Cass.
It's like brain level, like brain damage level bad. It is. It's embarrassing. I go to trivia night too. I don't know why I go, but I love it. I'm just there to watch people who have a great memory do their thing. It's terrible. No, it's awful. I also could not tell you. I'm reading a book right now. I could not tell you the title, the author, any of the characters. I have no idea, but I know what the story is about. So when it comes to things like that, I'm just like, it's not that we're stupid. This was really hard for me to understand. I just do not retain that type of short-term information if it isn't important. And I never have, and I never will. But where it is important is names. And I have a really hard time remembering people's names. So I have to do tricks to remember their names. And this is all about just acknowledging I have ADHD and I need to do things to overcome it. I'm never going to change my nature. I need to adapt so it fits me. So if I meet someone named April and I tried repeating her name a million times in my head, that doesn't work. But I'm like, April, April showers, springtime. Look at her. She's wearing pink. She feels bright. Yes. She's April. She's spring. And the next time I see her, I will not remember her name, but I'll like, oh, that's the spring girl. What's her name again? And I'll know it's April or May. Do you know what I'm saying? So,
oh, man, yeah.
I always do stories because a lot of us as ADHD are incredible storytellers. We will remember a story, but not facts. Yeah. And so anytime we have to remember something, if we turn it into a story, that's instantly a way that we can lock it into our memory. Or for me, anyways, it definitely works.
And I've been using that same technique for years because I was one of these people who would be like, oh, I can never remember anybody's name. But then at one point I thought, you know, I'm going to make a point of actually trying to remember people's names when I meet them. And I got to tell you, they love it when you come back to the second time you see them and you say, hey, Cassandra, how you doing? You know, and they're like, wow, I can't believe it. Because they give you that, oh, hey, you, because
hey,
they don't know
buddy. Your name. Hey, man.
But I use the exact same technique and it really works. I will think if I had just met you and you had introduced yourself as Cassandra, first I always repeat it back, hello, Cassandra. And then I would think in my mind, this way I do it is I try to think of a Cassandra. And this is weird, but for me, I think of Cassandra Peterson, who is Elvira. And I think, oh, Elvira. You don't have to look like Elvira. You don't have to do anything about her. But I remember that. And then somehow I associate that with you. And so that I remember your name. That's my technique.
I do the same thing. I love that. So fascinating. Yeah, it works. It really, really works.
Oh my gosh. So I haven't, and I've always been that guy who's just like, hi, I'm Chad and I'm horrible with names. So I'll probably forget your name. And I'm sorry about that, Peter. I mean, Paul or
whatever. And most people say that. Most people are like that.
They
do that. It's almost become like a thing like, yeah, I'm horrible with names.
Right.
Like, well, you can fix that.
It's like this gut reaction. Like it's this impulsive response to like being like, well, I can't fake it because I'm going to guess a million names before I guess your name. So the easiest thing for me is just to be like, I'm not good at names. But then like you're kind of telling yourself that.
You're
like,
reinforcing it.
To your point, Steve, it's like now you're just telling yourself that you're not. And like you put a little bit of work into it and figured out a way I just wrote it down. Just so I don't forget.
It's fun too because sometimes my stories are crazy that I tell about people. They have backstories on backstories on backstories on backstories.
Do you ever tell anybody about that? About how you've even at some point in their relationship, do you ever say, do you know how I originally remembered your name?
Yeah, we do. We talk about it. It's funny because and sometimes I'll like, oh, you, I kind of get like a little story about them. And then yeah, it's a whole thing. Somehow my brain is capable of remembering this, but not, you know, the name Jennifer. It's bonkers.
How well organized is your YouTube channel? As in, you take a lot of, you know, the elements that you do in all of the different spaces, but how does it actually pertain to coming up with new video ideas? And like, what does it look like when you're scheduling out and planning and organizing for your YouTube content?
It could be better, Chad. Okay. But coming up with the new ideas is my jam. That's where that creativity, that spontaneity, that impulsivity is my superpower. So I have notepads all over those main hubs in my home where I do tend to just sit and my brain wanders so I can capture memories down. So I have months worth of potential ideas, but I need flexibility. I can't schedule out 6 months worth of videos in advance because next week I might not feel like doing what I thought that I did. So I have a sticky note process where I'm just like, it's really flow. The ideas are there for months and ahead, but I kind of can pick and choose ahead. Because I do have employees now, I kind of got to wear big girl pants a little bit. So I usually schedule 3 to 4 weeks out. And then I get creative with like the next ones coming out. So people do know what's coming up. We have sponsored posts. I just started doing sponsored posts about a year ago. And so they require approval and like real important big girl entrepreneur-y type stuff. I'm not great with that. I'm not great with that, but I have to adapt. So I free up creativity in other ways, which is why I love podcasting. When I do a podcast, I literally sit, I turn on the mic, and I just let my brain flow. There's no planning there. And I give myself that gift of being able to just really embrace. And I feel like the podcasts are so much better than the videos because I am leaning into that creativity, that spontaneity, and that impulsivity, which can be a really a positive thing.
You've been doing this for so many years. Are you still happy? And do you still enjoy the process of putting the, do you still get a bit of a charge about putting a new video out? Or is it just kind of this is part of the job at this point?
There are days where I'm like, I cannot wait to retire. You know, there are. I can't lie. Those days come. But then the next day comes and I can't imagine doing anything else. I started doing YouTube as a hobby for pleasure, for fun. And if it all went away tomorrow and I lost my AdSense or I lost all my subscribers, I'd still do it anyways. Because there's something, I don't know, it's an addiction. It fills me, but it's a positive thing. I love sharing messages. I love feeling that feeling of helping someone else. I can't describe it. There's nothing in the world that feels as good as knowing that you've helped somebody who's struggling with mess and clutter make a change for the better. It gives me purpose. It gives me a reason for being here. And it just lights me up. It fills me up like nothing else I've ever tried. So I went through a long period of my life looking for something to fill a void, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. And filling it with really negative, toxic, horrible things. And then finding this as an outlet, and nothing feels better. So yeah, I still love it. I don't love the detailed structure part of it, but I still love the creating part.
And I think your channel is more than just a decluttering channel. I know you've been doing a lot of would you consider yourself a motivational speaker as well as a declutterer? Does one take precedence over the other? Because I kind of see that, especially on you had a recent video. What was that? 10 rules that changed your life.
I'm getting older now. And so I'm letting go of all the this is what you have to do. And I'm just doing what feels good. And I've talked about organizing and decluttering so much that I'm in a phase in my life now where I have a therapist and I have a life coach and I'm making these self-discoveries and I'm reading so many self-help books. And it's such a positive, insanely life-changing thing that I just want to share it. I want to share it with someone else. Look at this thing that's incredible going on in my life. How can I share it with you? And I started my channel because I was messy. And that was the incredible change that I was going through. And now I'm going through this new self-awareness, just learning how to just be a more positive, productive, happier person. And now I'm passionate about sharing that too. So I don't know if I'm a motivational speaker, but I just am trying to be real to myself.
Yeah, and they kind of go hand in hand because you're kind of what I had mentioned in the intro is that decluttering kind of extends beyond just the physical thing. So I think you're taking some of that decluttering experience and bringing it into life experience and your mental state. And I really liked the 10 rules that changed your life. A couple of things you even mentioned here was comparison is the thief of joy, rule number 9. And when you talked about comparing yourself to when you watch other YouTube videos or whatever. Wow, I think every YouTuber does that. You see other people doing things and you think, wow, they're so much better than I am. They know what they're doing. They've got it all together. And I'm faking this whole thing.
I'm an imposter.
And I feel like I've been faking this for 14 years on YouTube.
It's a grind, man. I remember when Marie Kondo first came out, I was like, oh, I got to do more folding videos. And then the home edit comes out. I'm like, should I be putting things in rainbows? And then TikTok and people are doing dances and they're doing this like this AMSR or whatever it's called, filling things, you know, and I'm like, am I going to have to do? And I realized, wow, I hate this. I hate the hustle of YouTube when I'm trying to keep up with trends, when I'm focusing on views and subscribers and analytics. I turn something fun into something horrible. And when I just step back and say, I don't even look at analytics, I'm going to tell you the truth because I know my videos aren't doing as well as they were before and they're not getting as many views. But when I stop chasing that and I stop looking at that, man, am I happier.
Yes.
I'm happier. And when you post a video and yes, you get that 1 out of 10, you're like, woo! But more often than not, it's a 6 or it's a 7 or it's a 10. And if you're not a YouTuber, you don't know what I'm talking about. But if you are a YouTuber and you know what I'm talking about, I cannot let my mood, my happiness be controlled by algorithms that I can't control. And so I just choose not to look at it anymore. And I'm just making content that makes me feel good.
And that kind of goes along with one of your other rules is you don't worry about things that you can't control. And I don't know if that's exactly how you worded it, but I remember giving that advice to people when we were in the thick of things in the pandemic and then the lockdown, and there was so much fury and anger going on and people were frustrated. And I just remember telling people, try not to spend all of your energy on this because it's out of your control. There's nothing you can do about it. So just let it go. Focus your energy on something else. And for me, that helps out a lot. And this is why I choose not to consume news and all of these things, because it just, it's easy to fall into that trap of getting, I'm getting so angry at something that's happening 3,000 miles away that has nothing to do with
me. In a different country. Yeah.
How are you guys with the YouTube game? I'm just like, are you feeling the same thing that I was feeling? This race to keep up, this, oh, I got to make the next video. How can I make it better? What are the hashtags that are trending now and what's trending and how can I?
Yeah. I feel like that all the time. I felt like that for my entire channel. I'm always trying to, I think the only difference now is that I think I'm finding a balance where I am aware of what the trends are and I'll dabble in them, but I don't make it my all-consuming. And it's kind of like you were saying, we judge ourselves and the quality of our videos based on the amount of views. And that's just one metric. It doesn't really mean everything. It's sort of important, but the quantity of something doesn't make it a better product. And you see this with, we might have had this conversation with JJ, but you see this with movies, like movies are judged by how much money they made or how many people saw it or how many, and that's not the judge of art. It's not the judge of quality. It's not about money and it's not about the number of eyeballs that see something for it to be quality. So I'm trying to focus on that while still being aware of the business and economics of what I got to do.
And for us, we got kind of caught up in the same time. Well, I mean, we've been doing this long enough. Like, we kind of set some of the trends early on. And it was kind of strange to see some of the videos that we were making other people doing and then getting more traction or more subscribers or them being the, you know, whatever. And then it starts to become, wow, oh, wow, they literally took the idea and rolled with it and they actually did a better version and they get better engagement of this. And then the next time that I'm making a clean with me video or thinking of a new idea, I got to think of something else. And it was right after I came up with a concept of the like a pro wording in the title. So like clean like a pro, or that was kind of the idea. And then all of those videos were just going to be little short little videos about a subject. And I realized I was making these videos just because it's like, these will get views. Like, this is the way to present it. And it got away from our traditional content, which in our archive, day after day, 85% of our views comes from content created a long time ago, and literally the content that was called how to clean your toilet, how to clean a bathroom. Like, no clickbait, no nothing. Back, you mentioned it before, YouTube University, like appealing to keywords as opposed to appealing to like search volume or audience or whatever. So we just kind of changed our North Star from worrying about what people wanted and more about trying to fill areas which hadn't been filled, and like niching down even more, how to clean your cell phone, how to clean your cell phone case. And of course those would be two horrible videos, but I think you see what I'm getting at. We had to return.
you lick the cell phone. That's how you clean the screen. Right.
Well, I mean, that's the new stuff. Cause if I were to make it the video now, it'd be like, should I lick my cell phone to clean it? ? And then a picture of me with my cell phone.
There you go. Right. There's your video right
but
there.
But it's so easy to get trapped up in that being now the metric of the success of your videos. And I would watch some of the videos that would get crazy views. And I realized it was so easy to make it. I used a bunch of old footage. We literally just did some BS intro, outro, slapped it all together because we wanted to upload something. And that gets 350,000 views because it's called 20 cleaning hacks to make your house look better. And people click and click and da da da. But to use that as like, now this needs to be something that I replicate, that's the trap. And usually when you're doing this for just a little while, you get your kind of hit and you're like, I'm going to keep doing the hit over and over again until I whatever, as opposed to like, okay, this worked, I'm going to try something different. Okay, that didn't work. And just keep working off of the North Star of like what you want to make and less of it, because it becomes very overwhelming. And especially when it's millions of people, the voices are all there when you're writing an idea down, and all of a sudden it's, will they like it? And that is the ultimate destroyer of creativity in my eyes.
It really is. And it takes it from being fun to a job.
Right.
And nobody wants to do a job.
Well, not people like us, apparently, because I got into this because I never wanted a job. I didn't do well in school because I never wanted a job.
Same.
Never had a good job because I never wanted to have a job. Didn't want to have a boss, but just wanted to be that person doing whatever. And well,
yeah, I think that emotionally and like for my own peace of mind, the biggest, most important metric, if we can call it that, for me is that I judge are by the quality and type of comments I get on a specific video rather than numbers. So this tells me if people really enjoyed the video. And I, for example, the documentary on YouTube woodworking I made, which I spent all this time and effort, and I knew this wasn't going to get lots of views because it's kind of really under the hood kind of a video, but lots of interesting interviews in it, and it didn't get a lot of views. It was like one of those six or sevens, you know, but oh my God, the people who watched it and the comments, and they were like, thank you, this is so cool to see this. And I'm like, the rating, 99.9%, you know, like rating. I'm like, well, this is sort of why I started YouTube, was for so people could enjoy the content I'm making. Not so much how many people would watch it, but just so the people who did enjoyed it.
I think one of the best things that I did for my business was lose my original channel. I think I told you guys about this last time, and started again realizing I need to diversify. I cannot put all my eggs in my YouTube basket, because you get, if I was dependent on YouTube income, if I was dependent on any of that for my business, oh man, it would be, I would never want to make a video because that sounds so stressful. So diversifying, working on my mailing list, making sure that's a priority, and having courses and books and like these coaching groups that I do in order to have things in my business outside of just YouTube, have been the most important thing I've ever done. And it really takes a lot of pressure off of YouTube, because now my YouTube channel is something, it's definitely an important part of my business, but it isn't all of my business. And I can kind of take some pressure off myself and do it for fun, knowing that I have most of my income, 90% of my income is coming from other revenue streams.
Is TV cast different than YouTube cast?
Yeah, TV cast has to be on our best behavior.
What is it like for cast to be on a TV set and like, all those people and rules and things?
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. Listen, because I went from having no boss to now having producers who are my boss. And they're like, can you say it this way? And can you say it again? I don't have a script when I do YouTube. It just falls out of my face. I say whatever I say. And that's freedom. And so on television, it's, well, you have 3 minutes to do this. And this has to be done in 56 seconds. And can you say this with more up, but not too much up? We don't want you to look manic. And, you know, there'll be like 27 takes for a one clip. And it's horrible. It's horrible. I thought it would be so cool having someone get me Starbucks and do my hair and makeup and those type of things. But it's a job. And this is the incredible thing about YouTube. It doesn't have to be a job. It can be a hobby that happens to make us money. We're in charge. We can have full creative control. And that's so incredible, and there's nothing like it. So if I had to choose television or YouTube, it's YouTube all day, every day. All day, every day.
Well, Cass, we're going to have you on sooner than a year from now, next time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I love being here. We kind of didn't really talk about organizing and decluttering, but that's okay. I love that.
We talked about ADHD. I had a therapy session with you. So
we could ask you, like, what's your favorite size container? We'll get the organizing.
My favorite size container is a cube, anything like 12 by 12 or 11 by 13. You can use that to organize everything in your home. So there, if you're looking for a container.
Could I go out and get some cubes?
There we go.
Put all my
crap in them. And so I can take them out and throw them away, because that's really what I need to do. Cass, it was great talking to you again.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. We'll see you guys soon.